This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, what's happening? You doing all right?
I'm well this morning, Pack. Is tonight the night, Pack?
Tonight for what? Am I missing something?
The night the streak ends. The night the streak ends.
No. It could happen. Could very well happen. I mean, we are at 11,695 days, which if it turns out that group out on the left coast lucks into one, I will be a little disappointed that I can't use that anymore, because it's been tremendous, really, 11,695 days. But, you know, winning that fourth game, Wes, you know how it goes in the playoffs, man. Winning the last one's the hardest one to win. It's the hardest one to win.
All right.
But 11,695 days. By the way, that's 1,600.
Hated Dodgers have a chance to win the World Series.
Yeah. That's, by the way, it's 1,600.
Hated Dodgers.
That's right. That's 1,670 weeks and 5 days, in case anybody's counting. So it could very well come to an end tonight. That's 280,680 hours. 280,680 hours since they last won one. So if it happens, hey, good for them. They've earned it during this pandemic year. Would be rather fitting that it's not really a full season. But if they win it, they win it. Tip of the hat. If you win the belt, you get it. But if they don't, if they lose tonight, I'm just saying, we get a little game 7, I'm assuming tomorrow night, God willing. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm good.
By the
you
way,
know
there'll
why?
Be, there'll be I, so much.
Go ahead.
Yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I don't
There'll be
really
so much more math in this show.
Tell me when you're done.
There'll be so much more math in this show today. After this display here at the top, it's going to be so impressive how much more math we do in this show today.
Well, that I'm just going to give you a little foreshadow that when we get to accounting, which is coming up this later this hour, all these numbers and figures will make sense for the infamous Sweet 16 spot, which, by the way, could have gone multiple ways today. Could have gone multiple ways. And I ended up at the last second making a switch. So, again, this was in play till very, very late. Speaking of in play, it's on tonight. I'll be watching that instead of the Dodgers. So there you go. Perfect tie-in.
Absolutely.
But we've got basketball news to get into.
A couple of pieces.
Right?
Yeah, we do. A couple pieces of basketball news to get started. Yesterday, it was announced that the Orlando Bubble, which was going to house several events, 8 of them, in fact, Champions Classic, Charleston Classic, Myrtle Beach Invitational, NIT Tip-Off, Wooden Legacy, Orlando Invitational, Jimmy V, and Diamond Head, all going to be held starting next month, have been canceled. Due to what ESPN said were certain challenges surrounding testing protocols for COVID-19. There is hope that the Champions Classic and Jimmy V Classic will move to a different location this season, and that's from our Jeff Borzello, who has joined us in the past. So, who's involved? Duke is involved, the Champions Classic, Florida State and the Charleston Classic, Virginia and the Wooden Legacy. So, those are the three ACC teams impacted by the cancellation of the Orlando bubble. The good news is that there's a positive angle that has developed with the Mohegan Sun facility in Connecticut, which has a 10,000-seat arena and, of course, is the home to the WNBA's Connecticut Sun. Vice President of Basketball Operations for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, Greg Procino, says that there are lots of things that work in their favor to potentially do it. First of all, 34-story hotel tower, where they can allow teams to have their own floors, back-of-the-house operations that allow these teams to stay away from contact with the public. He did indicate in some of his comments that there will be no fans in the Mohegan Sun Arena. They also have a 250,000-square-foot convention space or event space, if you will, where not only can they have practice courts, they could potentially also have sidebar games played at Mohegan Sun. So, The thing that struck me about this, Mark, is this is kind of the foretell of what basketball might be like, though. Yesterday, it also coincides, by the way, offline from this, Jeff Long announced that Allen Fieldhouse will only have a capacity of 9% for their KU basketball games in the foreseeable future, and they're going to base it on donors and, you know, students, faculty, parents, that type thing. But nonetheless, 9% of the, was it 16,800 seats at Allen Fieldhouse will be the capacity for games there. I think we're going to see basketball start to develop some shape here. Quite frankly, they're less than a month away from tip-off, so we better start seeing something.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can add much more to that, Wes. I mean, I read all that yesterday, and it, listen, the folks involved here know a lot more about it than we do as far as the protocols go. Mm-hmm. You have to be sure to keep everybody safe. Basketball will face the same issues that college football has, and that is, hey, can you keep everybody under one roof and keep everybody healthy and, you know, the good side from a test standpoint? You know, the good news, I would think, is that you're dealing with smaller numbers. So in some respects, it would seem on the surface that getting a basketball season underway in some respects should be easier in as opposed to what you had to go through with football, right, which was jumping in the pool for the very first time back in June, and we were still not sure if we were going to have a season. And here we are past the halfway point for ACC football. And, you know, has there been some disruptions? There have. Will there be some more? Probably so. But, you know, like you said, we're less than a month away from what is supposed to be the start of the college hoop season, November 25th. From an ACC perspective, we're kind of waiting on schedules and all that stuff. And fans are anticipating, you know, what is the season going to look like? So are we. So I just hope we can have one, you know, just like the football deal. You know, we got it started. Let's see if we can stay upright as long as we possibly can. Same thing in hoops. I mean, once this thing gets cranked up November 25th, whatever a season looks like, hey, enjoy whatever you get. I mean, it's just the world that we live in.
And you also understand now, too, why certain schools were trying to create their own bubbles, right?
Sure.
I think that also factors into a little bit of this. You know, you get 4, 6, 8 teams, whatever the case may be. They can play, you know, 3, 5 other games, however many they want to try and play, and create their own, you know, kind of small MTE. And, you know, this will be interesting to see how it kind of comes together. I know Chris Mack had talked about it at Louisville, Mike Krzyzewski at Duke, and things like that. There had been the possibility and discussion about all this. But we'll see where it falls. And then, of course, you know the ACC's trying to put together 20 conference games. We know that is the plan, at least right now, for the conference going forward, too. So we'll see how the schedule looks when they elect to start those conference games. And, of course, you know, then the dynamics around the games and the attendance and all those things come into play.
Well, and your news about what Kansas has decided, which is as great a basketball tradition as you're going to find in this country, and one of the all-time great home courts in the history of sports. For anybody who's been out there, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've already kind of experienced what a football season looks like in front of empty stadiums. And I suspect when we get to hoops, it'll have the same kind of vibe. And, you know, Wes, it is different when you turn on the tube. Again, I know you're doing games on Saturday, but as a fan, I'm sitting on the couch like everybody else. You turn on the game, you do miss the atmospheres, which college football makes Saturdays so spectacular. But, you know, the players just continue to play, and they kind of told everybody that. Hey, man, once the game starts, you get hit in the mouth. Hey, for the next 60 minutes, you battle like crazy, and it's just an honor to be able to play. These kids have done an incredible job getting out there to be in the position to play. And I'm sure basketball will feel the same way. Yeah, in Cameron Indoor and the Smith Center, and whether it's the Yum Center, whatever the case may be, down at Florida State, where they've had just unbelievable home crowds, it will feel different. But I will say it again, I would much rather have games being played in front of just a sparse crowd than us sitting around going, boy, can't wait till next year when we get our sports back. So embrace what you get.
Right.
And stay safe. And again, I think it's one of the reasons ESPN made their announcement regarding basketball. And as ACC fans, we just kind of wait to see what the schedule looks like.
Yeah, you're right. Sit tight. We got plenty more to go. By the way, the commissioner, John Swofford, will be with us tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Maybe we'll touch on some of these items as well as his visit during the ACC's Unity Week as well. We look forward to always talking with the commissioner. So we'll do that tomorrow. We got a big show here today, though. Dave Clawson coming up bottom of the hour. Tom Luganville, 8 o'clock. Dowling Cup. Ben Skoranek, the wide receiver at Notre Dame, fresh off a couple of touchdown catches in the win against Pittsburgh, all tabled to join us before we're done at 10 o'clock. But when we come back, conference cuts. That's right. Oh, ho, ho. Justin Fuente. Scott Satterfield standing. Dino Babers. I like the button down. And Bronco Mendenhall. Brian Kelly. That's a good-looking blazer, by the way. I like that. Come back with more conference cuts. Packer and Durham on a Tuesday on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Tuesday, October 27th. Accounting coming up. You can participate, of course. You come in with your own 1 through 15. If you're in the mood to come up with a sweet 16, you certainly can. But you're going to have to wait. That'll be later this hour, Wes. First up, though, conference cuts.
And we're going to go back to Saturday. I like rivalries, don't you, Pack? I like rivalries in college athletics especially. I think they're fun. We talked about NC State Carolina probably doesn't get the recognition nationally it should. People in the ACC, certainly within the walls of the state of North Carolina, know the value of anything the Tar Heels and Wolfpack get together to do. Well, after the game, Sam Howell had a can of gas and a match.
I mean, we don't really care about them. You know, that's more for them, just to give them some false confidence before the game. Because I feel like they're trying to give them their own confidence. I mean, we don't really care about them. I mean, we know what a ram is to a wolf. I think we saw it out there today. It could have been a lot worse than it was. So I'm not gonna say anything else about that.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that. You know why? Because, when you are, it's like the Dodgers or the Giants. I don't care if they want to go celebrate, go knock yourselves out. But, you don't have to have that deal on the other side. You don't have to sit there and go, oh, yeah, they're awesome. They're great. No. I didn't have a problem with that statement at all.
That was in response to a hype video that NC State put on their social media channels last week leading up to the ball game.
And let me tell you, Wes, that's fine too. That's part of the deal, but you don't have to sit there and go, hey, that's awesome. That's tremendous. You could give all that coach speak you want beforehand just to kind of, give him the Heisman pose. But, for Sam Howell to say what he said, hey, it is what it is. North Carolina, they're like, hey, scoreboard, boys, we'll catch y'all later. And if you don't like it, hey, you can do something about it next year when we see you. That's the way it works.
Yep. All right. Next up. This weekend, Virginia Tech and Louisville play for the first time since Louisville joined the ACC in 2014. In fact, this will be their first meeting since the 2006, January 2nd, 2006, at the Gator Bowl. Marcus Vick had a big day. James Anderson a pick six to seal it for the Hokies. It's a byproduct of the ACC scheduling model, and Justin Fuente yesterday received a question about that, and he had a very diplomatic approach, Pack, with his answer.
Yeah, I find the ACC scheduling model perplexing. But I always challenge our staff to do this and our players, I prefer not to be the person that complains about the problem without having the solution. I don't know what the solution is. I do think it's odd. I think it's, in some ways unfortunate. It is such a cool league with unique schools and, some regional, some regional benefits that I think are really unique and maybe only to the ACC that I think we don't get to take advantage of because of the way it's scheduled out. But I don't have the solution, so I'm not going to go on a rant complaining about it, but it is odd.
perplexing. Cool league. Louisville. Don't know them. Never seen them. Never met them. Perplexing biceps. Biceps. Wake Forest nightmare.
Don't have an answer, Coach. Nightmare. Do you have an answer, Coach?
Perplexing. No solution. Cool league, though. Cool league. I like cool league. Yeah. Perplexing. Wake Forest. Gosh, Wake Forest.
Ugh. Well done.
He's well my done. Man. And nice. I tell you what I liked about Justin Fuente in the press conference there. That was a new.
What's that?
That was a new kind of standard. He normally, you know, wants to snap the podium in half. He went full bicep. Squeeze bicep on that, which I liked. But, you know, I find him the most interesting of all the coaches on conference cuts.
Right.
And I don't even want to know what they are. As you well know, I see it for the first time just like the guy at home. I just love where he goes.
I know.
Love him. My favorite.
We have had this discussion on this show, excuse me, briefly. The schedule methodology in the ACC has been showcased in an entirely different way in 2020 because of taking down the division walls. We also know that the ACC kind of focused on the 250-mile radius from campus to campus. Now, the fact that Louisville and Virginia Tech have yet to play since the Cards have entered the league seems curiously odd to me.
Yeah.
And then when you go back and look at the fact that Saturday's game is only going to be the ninth meeting all time between the two schools, and their first since both are members of the ACC in, what, 7 years since Louisville's joined the league pack?
It is bizarre. It's bizarre.
Look, and I'm not saying anything that it has not been discussed. There's got to be a better way with scheduling in the ACC. There's got to be a better way. There's got to be a process. And look, we're seeing some of this with 10 conference games and realizing, and if we learn anything from this, we're realizing that in this 10-game league schedule that we have this particular year, that there are some nuances to the schedule that have to be addressed. And let's be honest. I mean, we're seeing some things that could potentially be implemented as we move forward. I don't know if divisions continue or not. I've told you I think it's okay if they don't. You guys have talked about having them. And that's fine. I think that's an important discussion to have. But also the rotations have got to be looked at as well. The rotations, and this is not to favor one school over another. This is just simply for the equity of the league as a football conference. Right, Pac?
Well, I'm perplexed. I have no solutions, Wes.
Don't have an answer.
I'm with Justin Fuente. It's a great league. It's a cool league. It's awesome. We're going to finally see this game, but I don't have any answers for you on that one. I'm not in charge. No. I'm still looking to drive the golf cart Friday. Right. Got no word on that. So you're asking me about scheduling. I'm trying to get a golf cart. So.
Yeah, you're at zero. I'm zero on the golf cart right now? Zero.
Let me tell you something. If I don't get an answer by the end of this show, I am taking my name out of the running to drive the golf cart Friday.
Oh, no.
I am.
I've
had enough. You know, we gave everybody a month's notice. Not a single person's responded. So as far as I'm concerned, if you don't get back to me by the 10 a.m. this morning, I'm no longer available for Friday morning. Just telling you.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good.
There's a solution.
Right. Bronco Mendenhall spent a large portion of his session yesterday talking about his quarterbacks, the juggling act, and the challenges that go with it.
Yeah, there's only so many repetitions, and the week goes fast, and there's hour limitations, and there's health restrictions of just trying how much can you practice, and how much wear and tear can your team take. And each quarterback requires touches. And so we're trying also to make sure that we're not predictable by identity when players, you know, are at that position, and that there's enough complementary plays. We're maximizing resources, right? We're looking for every possible way to move the chains and score points with the resources we have. And quarterback runs are really effective for us right now in terms of yards per carry and moving the chains. Being able to throw off of those runs has to happen so we're not predictable. While we have the core of our offense still developing with Brennan to make sure that that moves on. So it's just time and repetition, and that limitation, when you start dividing it, you have to be really careful. Otherwise, rather than preserving the core of what you're trying to do, you kind of start carving away at that and don't really have an identity when the other identities should be complementary to the main identity. And so that's the challenge.
All right.
I have three words.
Sounds like Cavaliers are going to be points. Going through three quarterbacks.
Score more points. You're going to have to do it this week because Tar Heels are coming to town. Do it.
Yep. Carolina in prime time right here on ACC Network at Virginia, one of the South's oldest football rivalries is staged again. All right. When we come back on the other side, Wake Forest head coach Dave Clawson will join us. His team beat Virginia and Virginia Tech in back-to-back weeks. A quick reminder to you, though, start your football Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on ACC Network. The boys will be all gathered around. Jordan Cornette host, E.J. Manuel, Eric McClain, and Mark Richt. It all happens in the huddle. A preview of the full slate of games. Keep you updated on all things football. And it is Halloween. We'll see what they dress up as, if you will. Saturday morning starts at 10 a.m. right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. Always enjoy our visits with Wake Forest head coach Dave Clawson. And our next one is right after this.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Wes, yesterday we had a chance to touch base with Dave Clawson, the outstanding football coach at Wake Forest. And we asked him point blank, man, you've had some big wins in Winston-Salem, but where did the one against Virginia Tech stack up?
Well, it's the best one we've had in the last week. you know, you try to enjoy every win, and especially every ACC win. You know, most of those games for us have all been 60-minute, four-quarter nail-biters, and this was another one for us. So especially with everything going on, the pandemic, the sacrifice our players have made, it was a really rewarding win, and now you put it away and get ready for the next one.
And the next one is obviously Saturday at noon here on ACC Network against Syracuse. But I want to go back to the part you just talked about, the landscape to which this is occurring. Every season is always a little different from the others, this one especially so, I'm guessing. But what about this climb has been unique with this particular team? It looks like, you know, the Clemson home game at NC State, then the interruption in your season, but yet that didn't deter the mission here.
No, I mean, we're a younger team this year. We have nine new starters on offense, and we're not playing with the defense that we thought. We've had a number of injuries and other issues in the secondary. So our defensive front is what we thought, but we're a lot younger in the back end. And in some ways, those extra weeks, we really took advantage of them. With missing spring football, with missing a normal offseason, I think every time you get a freshman or a sophomore an extra rep in practice, it makes your football team better. And Nick Anderson is a great example of that. You know, in a typical camp, in a typical year, you probably don't get to see him practice as much. And the longer we went practicing, the more and more he stood out, which, you know, earned him a starting role with some of our guys going down at safety.
What a day, huh? I mean, seriously, walk on, three picks, player of the week, 11 tackles, scholarship. I mean, how does it get any better than that, Coach?
Well, the great thing about Nick is, you know, our team took him and put him on his shoulders, and they were given chance of Scully, and he did not want any of the attention. You know, even this play here, I mean, he realizes that was a great play by Kalen Carson to tip the football. He's very unselfish. He's very team first. He's not real comfortable with the attention and doesn't crave it, doesn't want it. He's about all the right things for the team. And when a young man is like that, you're even happier for him. So we're proud of him. But you know, he didn't play a perfect game. We didn't play a perfect game. He knows that he can get better, and we know as a program we can still get better, and that's what's so exciting.
Coach, the effort defensively against Virginia Tech, and I'm interested in the carryover aspect of this too, because what you guys came up with schematically, obviously you had to defense in the run game. You knew Virginia Tech was explosive in the run game, and yet you get a guy with three picks, and you mentioned Anderson and Carson, two of your more pronounced younger guys on the back end for you, along with a couple of older fellows there as well. But the defensive effort certainly had to be kind of a starting point in your preparation, and it looks to me like it could be one of those things that certainly could surface for you as a positive going forward too.
Well, it needs to, and with the way that NC State ran the football against us, certainly Virginia Tech was averaging 312 yards a game. The six quarters that Hendon Hooker had been the quarterback, Hooker was averaging over 8 yards a carry, and Herbert was averaging almost 10 yards a carry. And, you know, we knew we had to defend the run much better than we did against NC State and we did against Clemson. And, you know, sometimes you aren't what you think you are. You know, sometimes you go into camp and you think this is going to be the identity of our football team and this is what we're going to be good at. And these are the areas that, you know, we maybe have to cover up for. And, you know, what happened this year without really having non-conference games, you didn't have a chance to figure all that out before you started the conference schedule. And so I think those first couple of games, we found out that we're a little bit different on defense than we thought we were. And I think our defensive staff has done a really good job of adjusting. In this league, every week it's a new challenge. With Virginia, we face three quarterbacks. Virginia Tech and offense rushing the ball for 312 yards and scoring 40 points. Syracuse is another challenge. They've got really good perimeter skill. Their receivers are excellent. They do a lot of different personnel groups. And it's the ability to adjust week to week with your defense, which makes it critical to play defense at a high level. And when you're younger, that is still a weekly challenge that, okay, we just did this, and now you're playing an offense that's completely different, a different personality, emphasizes different things, and that's really the weekly challenge with a young football team.
You know, at the end of the day, though, Coach, the object is to make sure they don't score. Virginia Tech crossed midfield eight different times in possessions, scored a grand total of 16 points. That's getting the job done in the red zone.
Yeah, I mean, to hold them to one touchdown is really was a great job by our defense, but it was really a complete team effort. Last year when we played Virginia Tech, really the script was flipped. We were the ranked team. They had kind of had an up and down year. We had the lead at halftime in the second half, really played flat, and they completely dominated the time of possession. So it was really important for our offense to have drives and control the clock and not give them too many possessions. And I thought our offense did a great job of that. We had a 17-play, 7-minute drive at the end of the first half that we converted three fourth downs. And when your defense is on the sideline and able to get a 15, 20-minute rest, that helps them play at a high level as opposed to being three and out and having a 2-minute rest. So it was a complete team effort. Virginia Tech has great returners. And I thought our kickoff coverage and punt coverage did a really good job. And all those things contributed to our defense playing the way they did.
Coach, when we look at what's going on offensively, and we talked about it on the show Monday about the combination backs in the league, and a lot of teams have two. And if you got two good ones, you got an upper hand in this deal. And last week against Virginia, it was Kenneth Walker. This past week against Virginia Tech, Christian Beal-Smith. And I know you and Warren Ruggiero talk about this a little bit and playing both of them. But then does it just kind of play itself out as to who the hot hand is and that's the guy that gets the carries? Because it literally was one guy one week and the other guy the next week.
It is. I mean, we feel really good about both of those guys. And I think in this league, if you don't have two running backs, you're in trouble. It's really hard to keep a running back healthy if he's playing 60, 70 snaps a game. It's not just carrying the football and catching the football. It's the things you got to do in pass protection. I mean, those guys are taking on 250 linebackers barreling an A-gap at them. And so we've had our best success here when we've had two running backs, whether that be Cade Carney and Matt Colburn. Now it's Christian Beal-Smith and Ken Walker. And I think the most important thing in playing two is just keeping two healthy and keeping two fresh. And certainly there's been games that turn out to be more Ken games, and Saturday just happened to be more of a Christian game. He was playing well. He had the hot hand, and we kept riding them. But those two are going to get a lot of snaps and a lot of carries for us for the rest of the year, and we just need to keep them healthy.
Dave, yesterday, Andrew Adelson brought up a quote from Manny Diaz at Miami who mentioned, "I'm not sure that folks, the average fan, understand the commitment that has been made by all these student-athletes, staff, administration, just to get to the field to play." As we now kind of roll in here to late October, and I know you've gone from an interesting personal scenario with your family during this COVID time, how difficult is it to balance out the fact that, hey, listen, yeah, we got to get ready for Syracuse, we got to put Virginia Tech in a rearview mirror, but also balance out that, hey, this is different. I got to pace our guys a little bit differently than what we would normally do during a regular season. How difficult is it now that we're reached past the halfway point of this season?
Well, it's really challenging because, you know, typically our players are here in June and then they have the 4th of July off. And then, you know, we usually give them a week off before the start of camp. And with all the protocols required with COVID, bringing them back in July, quarantining them, the weekly test, the 3 times a week test. You know, normally on bye weeks, you let them go home for the weekend for 3 days. We can't do that. So as much as the football season is always a bit of a challenge physically, I think the mental part of this is even more challenged, mm-hmm. that you just can't give them breaks because you're worried if you send them in 20 different directions, you don't know who's going to come back with COVID, and you don't want to start the whole quarantine process. So I think that's been the most challenging part of it, is it's hard to give them that needed break halfway through the season on a 3-day weekend or a bye week or a fall weekend for your campus. And that's why the winning's so important, to get a win and to have that energy and have that excitement. I think the players say, hey, this is worth it. If we could have moments like this, in celebrations like this, it makes all the sacrifice worthwhile. And, you know, that was a big win for us, and it gives us momentum. It keeps the morale high. And I think in a season like this, you just want to keep your season alive and keep your team going. And fortunately, the last 2 weeks have gone well for us, and we need to keep playing well.
Do you worry about, and I know you'll know kind of what I mean by this, do you worry about breaking up the monotony of this process and trying to create something that's fun and kind of take away from the distraction of what they're having to go through week to week and that grind to get ready mentally to play, just to change their gears all in a completely different direction?
You do, but all those activities you would normally do as a head football coach, you can't do with COVID because you can't rent out a bowling alley and have 160 people there. You can't take them to the movies. You know, we've done little group things with them that we spread them out. We had a steak cookout for our freshmen. But even when you do that stuff and they're eating 8 and 12 feet apart, you know, you do these things for unity, for bonding, for team togetherness. And, you know, it's just ironic. You're trying to do things to bring your team together, and while you're doing that, you're telling them to keep 6 feet apart. So, yeah, I get concerned about it. And we talk about it as a staff often. There just aren't a lot of options to break that monotony with COVID protocols, because we've made all this sacrifice so that we can play college football, that we can play games. And then to do something that would put that at risk, it's not worth it.
Dave, my final question for you is this. Last year, you won the state championship in the great state of North Carolina. What do you have planned now that you have cornered the Commonwealth of Virginia? I doubt they're going to let you cross state lines in recruiting. So how are you going to celebrate this with the team being the champions of the state of Virginia?
Well, I'm not going to go there. You guys can. You're in the media. You know, I have great respect for Bronco in Virginia and Justin, Virginia Tech. And those are really good programs, good players. They're very well run. We were very fortunate to win both of those games. And, you know, those are two of the most complete games we've played here in a while in terms of offense, defense, kicking game. Our formula to win this year is a little different than a year ago. And certainly different than 2 and 3 years ago. And we played really well. Again, I have great respect for those guys. And I spent 4 years in the Commonwealth at Richmond. So I have great respect for Virginia football. We've recruited that area very hard during my time here. And a lot of those guys, Boogie Basham, Nick Anderson, Suleiman Kamara, Travion Redd, those guys are all Virginia players. And I know those games meant a lot to them. So I told Boogie yesterday that I heard Syracuse relocated in the state of Virginia. When those guys play against the Virginia teams, it means a lot to them. So we're trying to get some of those games relocated to Virginia during Boogie's last year here.
Playing well.
All right. Final word, and I only know because I heard you talk about this with our friend Stan Cotton on your radio show a couple weeks ago. I want to make sure that people know the Kaiser Elliptical behind you is also one of the great tools in which to not only work out but also to watch practice video, apparently, right? Is that true?
Yeah, here's my setup. So this is my working office, and this is my elliptical. And then when you turn it, right there, you also get to watch Packer and Durham.
Look at that. Hey.
Nice. Nice.
So, hey, look at that.
So you, it's where I watch a lot of film. I check you guys out, and, you know, it helps me deal with the in-season stress a little bit. So usually after practice, I'll watch one side of the ball with the staff, and then I'll come in here and watch the other side of the ball and watch film while I get on my elliptical. So it's been a multitasking a little bit.
Coach, on a personal note, and I want to close with this. Are you doing okay? Because I know that you've been separated from your family, and that's never easy. I don't care what you do for a living because of the pandemic. Yeah. Are you doing okay in terms of just kind of getting through the grind?
Yeah, I am. And, we've been able to see each other a little bit with all these bye weeks and the amount of testing that we're doing. It hasn't been the complete isolation that I thought it would be. So I've gotten some family time in when I feel it's safe and appropriate. And, I just view this as, this is our job, that we make a commitment to our players, to our school and our program. And there's a lot of people during the pandemic that are making different types of sacrifices. And, we'll get through it. And I love our team and I love our program, and it's a joy to come to work every day. And we'll get through it, but I've also been able to see my wife, Catherine, and my son and daughter a little bit when it's been appropriate and I felt it's been safe. So again, it hasn't been, this 6 month isolation that I thought it would be when the season started.
Very good.
Yeah. No
food questions.
We always appreciate the time.
Well, we need to do a food question.
Whoa.
Yeah, we got to have a food question.
To go through a whole interview and not get any question about food would be really soul crushing.
Well, I was going to tell you that last Saturday when I was there for the Virginia game, Pac was proud of me, but he was also very upset with me because I went to Dewey's Bakery on Stratford Road and got a Moravian sugar cake because that was a flashback to my childhood because my grandparents, my mom's from Winston, as you know, my grandparents lived there, and I used to get Dewey's sugar cake all the time as a kid. Then I went across the street and bought 3 dozen hot original glazed for the crew that was doing our game that day. But Mark became increasingly frustrated with me, Coach, because I got the 3 dozen glazed and the sugar cake and didn't eat any of it. I gave the 3 dozen glaze to the crew and took the sugar cake home and shared it with my in-laws here in Cartersville. So just so you know, Pack was not happy. He was like my choices, but didn't like my execution.
Well, that's the type of discipline that's required during the pandemic. So I'm proud of you.
Well, let me tell you, you're both wrong, because here's what you're supposed to do. You load up on a sugar intake and you go and you take on the world, coach. You say, yeah, I'm buying a dozen. I want the other dozen free. I'm going to eat 12 of them in my car before I pull out. By the time I get to work, I am so wired. I am ready to take on the world. Both of you are wrong. Both of you are wrong.
So, well, I'll say this. I am, when hopefully this craziness is over at some point here, I'm looking forward to get down to Charlotte and head out to dinner with you guys. And we were going to put that trophy on your from a few years ago on your truck or your car. So
you got it.
I hope we can still work that out.
We're going to make that happen. Well, listen, continued success. And again, great, great win against Virginia Tech. But as you said, hey, got to move forward. Syracuse is next.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Always enjoy the visits. Dave Clawson's outstanding.
Yeah, done a great job too, on top of it.
Accounting is coming up. We got a lot to cover. But first, a reminder to you, we got a Halloween tripleheader of ACC football that starts at noon with Dave Clawson and the Deacons as they host Syracuse, or they visit Syracuse at the Dome on Saturday. And then we get Virginia Tech in Louisville. And then in primetime, presented by GEICO, number 15, North Carolina against Virginia. All right, sit tight. When we come back, this week's edition of Accounting, Mark and I unveil our 15 in my case, 16 in his, I'm guessing, right after this on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday right here on ACC Network. Tom Luganville is coming up here in about 10 minutes. He'll be hanging out with us for a half an hour. We will cover everything you need to know about ACC football. But Wes, it's a Tuesday. That means one thing. It is time for accounting. And again, proceed with caution. Folks at home watching and or listening, you can participate. You can come up with your top 15, 16 if you're in the mood. Yeah. Got something creative to come up with, that's cool. But to just hashtag Packer and Durham, and we will select two for tomorrow for the Fans Day. But Wes, you lead.
By the way, we've already had some excellent entries on the fan side of accounting for tomorrow's show, and looking forward to seeing what else we get before the deadline. All right, here we go. No surprise. Number one, Clemson stays there. Notre Dame is 2, Carolina 3, Miami 4, Wake Forest 5, Virginia Tech 6, Boston College 7, NC State 8, Louisville is 9, Virginia 10. Then the last 5 are Florida State 11, Pittsburgh 12, Georgia Tech 13, Duke 14, and Syracuse 15. Louisville went up 6 with the impressive win. They and Florida State just kind of swapped out, if you will. So there you go.
Yeah, I think we have tiers. We have top 4 have kind of separated. I think 5 through 8 are kind of separated, and that could be, again, whatever order you want. And I think 11 through 15 is kind of a glob, if you will. So I'm with you in that respect, even though I think the orders will be different. With that said, I now give you the 16, right? 15 plus the sweet 16. Number one is number one until proven otherwise. Number two is Notre Dame. I thought they were really, really good Saturday. Miami, North Carolina, 3-4. You may flip-flop them like Wes did. The only reason I've got Miami ahead of North Carolina, they have one mutual opponent. That would be Florida State. You can do the math and figure out who gets 3, who gets 4. I told you, 5 through 8, hey, you could put Wake 5th. It wouldn't matter to me. The only reason I got Virginia Tech 5 is because they are 2-1 against NC State, BC, and Wake, which is the best mark of that cluster of 4. So I got NC State 6, Wake, BC. Yeah. You can flip-flop them if you want. I'm cool with that. But I think those 4 teams are all kind of in their own group. Georgia Tech and Pitt have won 2 games apiece. They're at 9-10, even though I'm not sure that that's really where they are in the top 15, but that's where I've got them just because of wins. 11 through 15 is an absolute disaster in terms of trying to figure out who they are. I put a Louisville at 11 because they've got the best loss of the group, only losing by 5 to Notre Dame. A Virginia's 12 because they beat Duke, who's 13. Duke is 13 because they beat Syracuse's 14. And Florida State is 15. Why do you ask? Because I've looked at the Noles' body of work, Wes, with the exception of the second half against Jacksonville State and the first half against North Carolina.
Right.
They have been outscored. You take those two halves away. They've been outscored 200 to 79. They are a minus 90 in ACC margin, which is by far the worst. That's right, Florida State. So that's why the Noles are at 15. Number 16, the Sweet 16, goes to the head football coach at Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin. And if you don't know the story of why Lane Kiffin's math is sitting there at 16, here's the story. And there were four or five that could have been in the Sweet 16, but Lane Kiffin gets it. Here's why. He hated the officiating in their game Saturday. He was upset, so he went to social media to criticize, and that apparently is a no-no. So he got fined $25,000 from Greg Sankey. Hey, it happens. Guy's worth it. He can just reach in his pocket. He probably got $25,000 in his pocket. Well, Lane Kiffin, because he got fined by going on social media, went on social media. And here's the first thing he tweeted. Lane Kiffin, where can I find 25,000 pennies? Lane, it's $25,000. Dollars. So Lane went back on Twitter. So here's what he came up with. I meant 250,000 pennies. No, no, no. This is Western math at its finest. Lane, it's $25,000. So Kiffin went on Twitter for the third time. And this is what he gave us. Ha, we have a winner. 2.5 million pennies to pay that off, Lane. So if you want to be that petty about the fine and pull an old Rusty Wallace 1980s trick, that's up to you, because he paid off a $5,000 fine in pennies to NASCAR. So Lane's taking a page out of that. But, dude, that math, even Wes Durham said, good grief, that dude can't add. Lane, it's like this. 2.5 million is about the amount of points you guys have given up through the month of October. I mean, you should know numbers that high. So therefore, Lane Kiffin's math skills reach the coveted. I can't say coveted because we only have one coveted. We have a coveted invite.
No.
But the exclusive real estate, which is the Sweet 16. Lane Kiffin's math skills. 16th this week. There you go, Wes.
Yeah. There were other candidates, right?
Oh, there were some good ones. There were some good ones. Every week there's good ones. So you come up with something creative there.
Let's hold that until, you know, you never know where you might need to go back to an old reliable at 16.
Oh, just because you've made it to the Sweet 16 doesn't mean like that's the only time you can reach the finish line. No, 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 no. You are more than capable of going back. In fact, your beloved ATLLL Falcons, these guys that you always give me that four times a show. Tell me you guys have won one game. They had a chance. James Franklin had a chance. The Falcons had a chance. The New England Patriots had a chance. Dallas Cowboys had a chance. There's always potential folks for that Sweet 16 spot on a Tuesday.
All right. When we come back, 8 o'clock hour on a Tuesday, that means the traditional landing spot of the Blue Ostrich, Tom Luganbill. He spends a half hour with Packer and Durham breaking it all down, and we are closing in on Halloween, another Luganbill favorite. Do we get a costume? We'll see. Back after this.
Don't forget to vote on Election Day, November 3rd. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com. Packer and Durham.